Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Thursday, the 23rd day of September. We're looking at a sunny and pleasant day today. The high will be 73 degrees. Tonight, we go down to 49 degrees under clear to partly cloudy skies. Looking around the region, pleasant today and plenty of sunshine. Clear to partly cloudy tonight. Sunshine mixing with clouds tomorrow. Breezy in the afternoon. Saturday and Sunday, partly cloudy. The sun rose this morning at 6:58, and it sets tonight at 7:05 p.m. Let's look at the front page and see what the lead stories are today. They include Cedar Falls candidates for mayor square off, Memorials Day, and we will begin reading Man Dead After Cedar Falls House Fire, story filed by Meta Hemingway Forbes. The story begins with a photograph of the exterior of the house that caught fire, and there is smoke and fire damage showing on the siding of the house, and some windows are out. Cedar Falls. A man was found dead after Cedar Falls Fire Rescue responded to a house fire early Wednesday morning. Fire Rescue was dispatched to a residential fire at 616 West 1st Street around 4:04 a.m., Dispatch had received reports of heavy smoke and flames coming from the back side of the house. Fire crews arrived on the scene and found smoke coming from all four sides of a residence and a fully involved kitchen on the south side of the home. Fire crews made entry and quickly extinguished the fire, according to a news release. Crews found 62-year-old Timothy Hersey deceased in the kitchen. An investigation is ongoing to determine the cause of death and contributing factors. The State Fire Marshal's Office has been called in to assist in the investigation. Our next story is titled Memorials Day. Cedar Valley Veterans Experience Emotional Day on Honor Flight, filed by Andy Malone. And it opens with a photograph taken inside the airplane showing the veterans all wearing red shirts, and most of them have white ball caps on. And almost everyone has a face covering. Waterloo. When you encounter the name of someone you knew on the wall, it can result in an unexpected burst of emotion. Diedrich Ulrich, an Army veteran of the Vietnam War, saw the names of three hometown friends on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, but one really hit him hard. Quote, "It's overwhelming. It really is," he said. He lost his friend Roger Heights of Clarksville during the Vietnam War, and seeing his name brought back memories of time spent together. Quote, "He had a baby he never saw," Ulrich said. He volunteered to help on a rescue mission when he was killed, and he was planning to head home in 2 weeks, unquote. Ulrich, of Allison, was one of 92 Northeast Iowa veterans who arrived at Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport in Arlington, Virginia. On Wednesday at 8:39 a.m., aboard the 26th Sullivan Hartog Davis Cedar Valley Honor Flight, they traveled to the nation's capital to visit several memorials and Arlington National Cemetery. The first stop was the World War II Memorial, marking the continuation of a long-standing tradition associated with the Cedar Valley Honor Flights since their beginning. And here there's a picture of one of the veterans in a red t-shirt wearing a white cap, and he's standing in front of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall and pointing to a name. U.S. Army Brigadier General David Cole and his wife, Connie, both of whom graduated from Waterloo West High in 1959, greeted the veterans as they have the previous 25 classes. Quote, "I'd cancel anything on my schedule to meet them," he said. "An honor flight costs about $100,000. To raise that kind of money within the local community, it's just a tribute to Iowans," unquote. The group visited the Lincoln, Korean, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery. By 2 p.m., the group had arrived at its latest destination, the Marine Corps War Memorial, when it started pouring rain. The veterans later continued the tour at the Air Force Memorial. Also on the trip, Army veterans Robert Yuska, Joe DeMuth, Ronald Stotzman, Larry Oltroga, and Gary Lee Turn rediscovered the friendship they founded while members of the 289th Ordnance at the U.S. Army Reserve Center in Waterloo in the 1960s. Quote, "I was amazed that we were on the same tour, but we didn't know we were on the same bus until today," DeMuth said. A Boeing 737-800 carrying area veterans who served during the Vietnam and Korea War eras took off from Waterloo Regional Airport at 6:48 a.m., resuming local honor flights after an interruption due to the pandemic. The veterans hailed from in and around Waterloo-Cedar Falls area, with towns such as LaPorte City, Hudson, Green, Independence, and Jessup represented. After being greeted by the Brigadier General, veterans experienced many of the highlights they missed when last year's flight was canceled due to COVID-19. Some created rubbings of names on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall, while others collected stamps of the memorial names with the date of the day visited. Most watched the changing of the guard at Arlington National Cemetery and saw the 19 stainless steel statues at the Korean War Veterans Memorial, which look real at first glance. The chatter began at 5:45 a.m. as the veterans, decked out in red shirts and white caps, commemorating the day-long adventure, boarded the plane along with their chaperones. Asked if he were ready for the trip in the early morning hours, Donald Martin, an Air Force veteran from Waterloo, replied, "You bet. It's been delayed a year and a half," unquote. "I just want to see everything," he added. "I've never been to Washington, D.C. The next story was filed by Andy Malone. Cedar Falls mayoral debate touches on PSO, zoning, and human rights, and begins with a photograph of Cedar Falls Mayor Rob Green. Cedar Falls. The final statement of Tuesday's mayoral debate came from incumbent Bob Green, who said it is impossible to judge his performance at the city's helm after only 2 years in office. He is seeking re-election to a second term against challengers Dave Sires, an at-large councillor, and Tom Blanford, a former councillor. "Because of the learning curve that comes with being in the top role," Green said, "he would like to apply all that he's picked up along the way and truly make the mayor's office his own. Whether he stays put for another term comes down to voters in November. At the event, which took place at the Cedar Falls Women's Club and was hosted by the Rotary Club of Cedar Falls, voters got a taste of where the candidates stand on a number of issues. Moderator Gail Bonsall pressed the candidates on topics ranging from public safety and human rights to zoning and the First Amendment. The trio also received some rapid-fire yes or no questions on whether they support spending on certain projects. Sires, born and raised in Cedar Falls, sat on the far end of the spectrum with his opinions on some issues. He voiced adamant opposition to public safety officer model as a strong proponent of separate departments because firefighters and police officers are completely two different kinds of people," unquote. Quote, "There are so many facets of each one of those professions that you can't do them both at the best level. You have to concentrate on one or the other," he added. A package of ordinances overhauling downtown zoning is another proposal he adamantly opposed. Form-based zoning is a real problem, for instance, because it allows for apartment buildings to be built in current R1 districts where single-family homes lie, he said. And he takes issues with the proposal largely getting rid of the planning and zoning process, which serves as a checking point for board members and residents who want to stop a project from moving forward. On the opposite side sits Green, who is 100% in favor of form-based zoning when it comes to the proposed law impacting development and expansion downtown. Multiple property owners opposed and proposed ordinances Monday, and the second reading was postponed. Green said he supports the majority of councillors who felt the need to hear from the stakeholders and, if necessary, implement changes that would revert the process back to the Planning and Zoning Board. As for the PSO model, Green said it is a false dichotomy, to ask, do you want the model or don't you? Quote, I believe it's very possible to have a compromise, he said. He noted he'd like to see changes, but supports having first responders cross-trained. Both Sires and Green believe the full-time public safety director position should be eliminated. Quote, I believe that the vast majority could qualify fully as firefighters and police officers to be able to do both roles, but I don't think it's fair to require them to have both roles in order to apply for the job. So that's why I proposed the Public Safety 22 plan, which would require all officers to come in either as police officers or as firefighters, he said. Once they're qualified, then they're able to attain additional certifications to become a public safety officer, unquote. Blanford, a graduate of Cedar Falls High School and the University of Northern Iowa, complimented the current PSO model, but contended police and firefighters are somewhat separated as it stands. Quote, fire personnel spend 95% of their time work on the fire side, some with police, and the benefit is that they are able to help each other in responding to emergencies, he said. When Sires raised doubts about whether a police officer or firefighter can be effective in both roles, Blanford maintained it is wrong to question the commitment or effectiveness of officers. Quote, these are well-qualified, well-trained people who are committed to keeping our community safe every day, he said. As for the downtown zoning ordinances, Blanford broadly supported the vision process, calling it hugely important for replacing outdated zoning. He said the proposals are the result of hundreds of community members participating. He acknowledged parking is a sticking point, a separate conversation that we should be having, and I hope the council will take it up, unquote. Two other issues were touched on at the debate. First, the conflict associated with Blanford using public parks for campaign events after a little-known policy outlawing such gatherings came to light. The council modified that policy Monday night to allow the events from noon to 8 p.m. until after the election. The roles of the Racial Equality Task Force and Human Rights Commission were also discussed. All the candidates largely complimented the work of the task force, assembled to put together a report and make recommendations for action. But Sires took an issue with it not being an independent committee and instead having some city councilors sitting on it, along with other stakeholders, including members of the HRC. There was support for providing the HRC with resources to do its job effectively. Green emphasized the importance of the Commission's Advocacy Committee in understanding the complaint process involving the Iowa Civil Rights Commission, quote, inside and out, and being able to listen to complaints without judgment while offering advice, such as how a person is able to access police body camera footage if issues were raised about an interaction with law enforcement. At the same time, Green noted his expectation that the Human Rights Commission have a very strong oversight role with the ICRC, but not too much of a role in investigations, or else it loses, quote, that ability to be advocates for the complainants. Blanford, a former HRC member, slightly disagreed. He argued for a larger role to be played by the local agency and less by the ICRC. He provided an example of people coming to the HRC after experiencing alleged housing or employment discrimination. Quote, it's already hard enough for them to come forward and tell something, but then to be told, thanks for sharing with us, but tell it to somebody in Des Moines. I think it's just going to make that process even harder and more difficult for people, he said. Quote, I think keeping that process here in Cedar Falls, if there's a concern about resources, then let's give them resources they need to do it well. The most recent budget gave them $1,500 for the Human Rights Commission, which is woefully inadequate to be able to effectively serve the community of this size. He said Cedar Falls can learn from what Waterloo has accomplished with its program and advocated for the hiring of a full-time human rights director. Rapid-fire questions posed to the candidates are as follows. Question, Should the city plant trees to replace the thousands lost because of storms and disease? Blandford, yes. Sires, absolutely. Green, yes. Question. Should the city be spending thousands of dollars to install permeable alleys? Blandford, yes. Sires, absolutely not. And Green, probably not. Question. Should the city invest more than $4 million to remodel City Hall? Blandford, yes. Sires, absolutely not. Green, yes. Question. Should the city build a parking ramp in downtown? Blandford, a qualified yes. Sires, very possibly. And Green, yes. Turning the page now to the Cedar Valley section, the top story is Shooter Details Fatal Encounter. Lysandra Johnson testifies about fatal Waterloo shooting. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. And it begins with a photograph of Lysandra Johnson as she testifies during a trial on Tuesday, September 22nd. And Lysandra is wearing a face shield and a lavalier microphone. Waterloo. Lysandra Johnson said she was terrified and trying to flee from people attacking her when she fired a shot from her pistol in November. The shot struck 27-year-old Jada Young Mills in the chest, killing her, and Johnson, 36, is charged with first-degree murder. Prosecutors said the two had been in an argument over hair extensions as they sat in Johnson's SUV parked on Dawson Street. The argument turned into a physical fight that friends broke up. The state alleges that when the fighting was over, Johnson climbed into the passenger seat of her vehicle, removed a 9mm pistol from the glove box, aimed at Young Mills, and pulled the trigger. On Wednesday, Johnson took the stand, telling jurors Young Mills and others were trying to get in her vehicle when she fired what was supposed to be a warning shot. Johnson said she had purchased a pistol, a 9mm Ruger, about 10 years ago following a domestic violence situation in Wisconsin. She had fired guns at a range before, but had never shot the Ruger, which she carried in her purse or glove compartment. She said on the night of the shooting, she and her boyfriend, Christopher Harrington, had driven her SUV to a home on Dawson Street where his mother was staying. When he went into the house, a car carrying Young Mills and two friends, Christopher's sister, Shara Harrington, and Gloria Bolden, pulled up next to the SUV, and the three climbed inside Johnson's vehicle, she said. The trio was returning from a night at the Applebee's and at the Brig House Bar and Grill, and Johnson said Sahara Harrington made a FaceTime call to her daughter. The conversation began to turn hostile when they brought up hair. Johnson had sold Young Mills hair extensions a month earlier, and Young Mills had been unhappy about the purchase, according to prior testimony. Inside the SUV, Johnson said the others were touching her hair, and she asked them to leave. Young Mills responded, "You're going to have to move me." And Johnson opened the door, Johnson said. She said Young Mills grabbed her hair and pulled her out of the SUV, and they fought beside the vehicle. She said she ended up on top of Young Mills, and she felt others on top of her hitting and kicking her. Christopher Harrington and his mother broke up the fight, she said. At some point, she said she heard Young Mills say something to the effect that she wasn't worried because she has the same gun as Johnson. Johnson said she tried to get back inside her vehicle, but one of the women blocked her at the driver's side. She said she bent over to pick up a hat that had come off during the scuffle, and the woman jumped on her. "All I know is I was trying to get up and get them away because I was terrified for my life," she said. She went back to her car and got in the passenger side, but she wasn't able to close the door. Quote, "The door is moving back and forth because they were trying to enter the vehicle, and Chris is trying to stop them," Johnson said. "I grabbed my firearm to protect myself. I shot it in the air so they can get away from my vehicle," Johnson said. She said she wasn't aiming and intended to shoot into the distance. She said she was remorseful for what happened. Quote, "I'm very sorry," she said. "I didn't intend to shoot anybody," unquote. Also taking the stand on Wednesday was Christopher Harrington, who said Johnson was being attacked when she shot. Quote, "After they got broke up the second time, I opened the passenger door and put Lysandra in the car. Jada is still coming for the truck, Christopher Harrington testified. After the shooting, Christopher Harrington said he drove off, cutting through yards, because the SUV was partially blocked in by other parked cars. That was the only way to get out, he said. The defense also put on the stand a neighbor who was outside smoking a cigarette at the time of the fight. The neighbor, who didn't know the identity of anyone involved, described seeing a group of women attacking a lone woman and her boyfriend trying to get them off her. She said when the gunshot rang out, everyone was on the other side of the vehicle, and she couldn't see what was going on. Closing arguments in the case are scheduled for Thursday in Blackhawk County District Court. Our next story was filed by Amy Rivers. City grapples with Love's overflow truck parking. Love's overflow parking onto Greyhound Drive concerns Waterloo Council. And here there is a photograph of semi-trucks and campers, and they're seen parking on the shoulder of both sides of Greyhound Drive on Thursday near Love's travel stop in Waterloo. Waterloo, the city will gather public input and give a truck stop company time to respond regarding a proposed ordinance that would ban parking along a road that fills up with semi-tractor trailers at night. The city council unanimously passed the first reading of an ordinance to ban parking along both sides of Greyhound Drive, but unanimously declined to waive the second and third readings, which would immediately have put the ordinance on the books. Quote, "We're going to get into the snowy weather soon," warned Councillor Sharon Juan. But Councillor Jerome Amos said the council didn't need the rush. "They've been parking there," he said. The truck parking, which can take up both sides of Greyhound Drive, is apparently the result of overflow at Love's travel stop at 3301 Greyhound Drive, city staff said. Sandy Greco, city superintendent of traffic operations, said the city has received a number of complaints regarding trucks. She also said a developer in the area, Harold Youngblood, owns a good portion of land in the area, had asked for an ordinance change. Quote, "They've seen truckers dash across the street early in the morning," Greco said. "It's a real safety issue." Resident Ton Obadal said he drives along Greyhound Drive and, quote, "never had any problem," contending the city was caving in to one developer for aesthetic reasons. Quote, "These guys need a place to stop, a place to pull off," he said. "If they don't have a place to go, they're going to be on the interstate on ramps and off ramps." Love's Travel Stops and Country Stores, founded in Oklahoma in 1964, has more than 560 stores in 41 states. 10 of them are in Iowa. It caters to professional truck drivers as well as motorists. The Waterloo Loves on U.S. Highway 63, near its intersection with U.S. Highway 20, opened in 2017. Its services for long-haul truckers include private showers, scales, tire care, and oil changes, laundry, and truck parking. Greco said there are 60 parking spots for tractor trailers there, which most said is not enough. "By 6, 7 o'clock at night, you ain't getting a parking spot in there," said a resident, identifying himself as Jeff Eastman, a former over-the-road truck driver who opposed the parking prohibition. Quote, "You drive by at 7 in the morning, you might have a lineup of trucks parked outside because the lot is full when they got there. Those truckers can't move into the parking lot even if spots open up because of federal regulations on driving time," he said. "Those people need to sleep, and the area's wide open," Fessman said. "Instead of putting up no parking signs, how about putting up a sign that says, heavy truck traffic?" Councillor Dave Boson said he prefers to work with Love's before banning street parking, but noted there have been problems with garbage and illegal dumping. Quote, "I think we erred in putting that little triangle lot out there and landlocked them," Boson said. He said the council should consider giving the company incentives to build additional parking. "I think it's our responsibility to assist them," unquote. "But Love's chose that lot," countered Noel Anderson, community planning and development director. Quote, "I agree with us trying to work with them," he said, though he said he has called the company four times without a response. Quote, "We want to see Love's succeed here and grow here." Representatives from Love's did not immediately return a courier message Wednesday seeking comment. One, worried about snow removal when winter hits if trucks are parked all day. While Councillor Jonathan Grider said people driving through or trying to get businesses in the area also are a factor, Councillor Pat Morrissey asked about prohibiting parking on one side only or on certain days of the week to allow for plowing, something Councillor Margaret Klein said she would also consider. Quote, "Those guys are trying to make it to Love's, and once they get there, they need to rest," Klein said. "So I'm hoping for a compromise either way," unquote. The next story was filed by Andrew Wind. National Cattle Congress Fair returns a week later than usual with new carnival and acts. Waterloo. There's a new carnival and some different attractions as the National Cattle Congress Fair returns for the 111th time following a year's hiatus, one week later than it has traditionally been held. Like virtually every other festival, the COVID-19 pandemic caused the cancellation of the iconic Waterloo Fair in 2020, but the gates opened Wednesday evening, allowing people to again fill the grounds at 257 Ansboro Avenue for numerous attractions and all kinds of fair food. Among those are a magician, rodeo, circus act, motocross racing, livestock shows, vendors in the exhibit hall, a tractor pull, and the carnival. Jim Koch, National Cattle Congress manager, welcomes back the fair's sights and sounds, including the shrieks of children delighted to be on carnival rides. Quote, "I'm looking forward to hearing that again. It's been missed," he said. Quote, "Yeah, it's good to be back," unquote. The fair started at 4 p.m. Wednesday for preview night and continues daily through Sunday. It begins each day at 9 a.m., with carnival rides starting at 3 p.m. Thursday and 11 a.m. the rest of the days. Wristband specials are available each day for rides, or tickets can be purchased individually. Daily general admission is $6 for children ages 6 to 12, $10 for those 13 and older, $8 for seniors 60 and older, $5 for veterans who can show a military ID, and free for kids 5 and under. Parking is also free. A super pass covering all 5 days of the fair is $25. Special admission prices are offered 2 days for certain groups. Friday is Kids Day with $4 admission for ages 6 to 17, and Sunday is Family Day with $8 admission for ages 13 and up. Quote, "We've changed our date by 1 week," said Koch, "to avoid a conflict with a new event on the NCC grounds." Quote, "We picked up a horse show last year that was well worth our time. The Iowa Fall Classic couldn't change its date this year, so the fair made the switch." Quote, "We picked up some entertainment, some new food vendors we haven't seen before," he noted, "because of the change. Among those is the carnival Louisiana-based Crescent City Amusements. It also offers some different rides, including the Fireball, Rocket, and Soarin'." Quote, "We added another outdoor stage with live music," said Koch. "NXT Bank Stage at Veterans Plaza will join the Trinity Rail Stage in the Pepsi Pavilion." Strolling entertainer Hillbilly Bob is back for about a two-decade absence. Singer Casey Musingman, a contestant from Season 3 of The Voice, will perform Friday night at the Pepsi Pavilion. The Wheels of Agriculture game show will be another new attraction. Among attractions returning from previous years will be the Moogician and the Roaming Dino Trail, which also has an exhibit with an archaeological dig in Estill Hall. The Kent Family Circus, absent for several years, also has returned. The Iowa Rodeo Cowboys Association Finals will be held Thursday through Saturday at 7 p.m. in the Hippodrome. The Motocross Clash at the fair will take place at 5 p.m. Saturday at the NCC Extreme Moto Park. A tractor pull will start at 1 p.m. Sunday in the Hippodrome. a series of daily shows will be in the Hippodrome, the Open Show Friday, and the Novice Show Saturday, both starting at 9 a.m., the Youth Dairy Show, and the 10th Annual Supreme Champion Dairy Heifer Scholarship Show will start at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday. In addition, the Fall Harvest Llama Show will be held from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday at South Anniversary Hall. More information and a complete schedule is available online. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Thursday, September 23rd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. James Dale Barber, Jimmy, known as Bird Dog, Bimbo, Jimbo, Jim, Uncle Jim, and Papa, age 50, known to the ones that loved him so dearly, went to be with the Lord on this day, September 21st, 2021, from a brief illness. A private service is planned with a celebration of life at a later date. Jim was born in Waterloo, Iowa, to David Donald and Diana Jean, maiden name Francis, Barber. Jim was one of the funniest individuals a person could ever meet. His quirky demeanor was one you couldn't forget. He could make up a limerick at the drop of a hat and make you laugh so hard. Jim was one of a kind in spirit and had a deep faith in the Lord. Jim was truly his happiest when attending family gatherings, especially since he was living far away at times from family. Holidays were his favorite. He could catch up on everyone's lives and was very proud of all his nieces and nephews. Jim was very close to them all and extremely close to his sisters and brothers. Jim enjoyed all sports. He could tell you every stat of most all teams and players. He loved the Chicago Bears and was a diehard fan. He will be dearly missed. Diane Marie Schmidt, 74, passed Tuesday, September 21st, comfortably in her home. She was born April 7th, 1947, to Louis and Wanda, maiden name Bixby, Anderson, at Berkeley, California. Diane attended Cedar Heights Grade School, Pete Junior High, and graduated from Cedar Falls High School. Married to Dennis L. Schmidt on November 27th, 1965, at the Little Brown Church in Nashua. She spent much of her life at home caring for her children. Diane loved spending time in Minnesota at the family home. She enjoyed spending time with her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Diane also enjoyed traveling and seeing different parts of the U.S. with her husband. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Monday, September 27th, 2021, at Dahl Van Hoof Schoof Funeral Home, with burial at Fairview Cemetery, both in Cedar Falls. Visitation will be 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Sunday at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers or plants, memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice. Condolences may be left at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Diane lived a life walking hand in hand with the Lord. She was the mortar that held the bricks of the Schmidt family together for decades. She has laid the foundation for everyone, not only in this immediate family, but extended as well, and shown us all the path of love, laughter, and joy. Her memory lives on within us all, in the memories we all share. This is not goodbye. It's see you later. We love you more. Waterloo. Rebecca Ann Whitney, age 70, of Fridley, Minnesota, formerly of Waterloo, passed away peacefully in her home, surrounded by her family on Monday, September 20th, 2021. She was born in Waterloo, the daughter of Darlene, maiden name Loy, Las Pardowski, and Carl Roberts, and lovingly raised by her mother and stepfather, Delmer Hospodarski. Becky graduated from Waterloo East High in 1969 and married Dan Whitney on November 6, 1971, in Waterloo. She worked as a territory sales manager at GE's Modular Space in Minneapolis. Becky's visitation will be from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, September 23, 2021, at Dahl Van Hoof Schoof Funeral Home of Cedar Falls. Her funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, September 24, 2021, followed by burial at Hillside Cemetery of Cedar Falls. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family, and condolences may be left at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Jessup, Don L. Fratsky, 58 years old, of Jessup, Iowa, died Tuesday, September 21st, at Mercy One Medical Center in Waterloo, Iowa. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, September 25th, 2021, at Zion Lutheran Church, Jubilee, rural LaPorte City, Iowa, with Pastor Kristen Corr Rod officiating. Burial will be at the Zion Lutheran Church, Jubilee Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. Friday, September 24th, at the White Funeral Home, Jessup, Iowa, and for an hour before services on Saturday at the church. Memorials may be directed to the family to be given to the Buchanan County Fair and the University of Iowa Kidney Transplant Department. Now let's read the Metro Briefs column. Clothing drive to help refugees, Cedar Falls. Cedar Falls Christian Church is holding a clothing drive for Afghan refugees at Fort McCoy in Wisconsin. Many arrived at Fort McCoy with only what they were wearing, and the need is urgent as the weather gets colder. New and near new clothes are being collected between noon and 6 p.m. daily through October 3rd at 2727 West 4th Street. Due to military restrictions, new clothes can be delivered quickly to the refugees. Near new clothing is acceptable, but takes longer to process and distribute to the refugees. Financial donations are also being accepted. For more information, call area code 319-404-0735 or email loidalesle@icloud.com. Oddfellows to host meal, Cedar Falls. A ham and Swiss steak family-style dinner will be served from 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. October 2nd at 402 West 2nd Street. The cost is $10 for adults and $5 for children. Kids under 5 eat free. Dine-in and carry-out options are available. Cedar River Dam will be deflated, Waterloo. The City of Waterloo will begin to deflate the Cedar River Bladder Dam October 4th. The deflation is taking place in preparation for the Park Avenue Bridge replacement and the Marina Project. It will be deflated by 2.5 inches per day on weekdays through October 29th. The slow deflation allows upstream aquatic life to adjust to the changing river level. Button Club meets Wednesday, Waterloo. The Black Hawk Button Club will meet at 1 p.m. Wednesday at St. Paul's United Methodist Church, 207 West Louise Street. This program discusses incorporating buttons into embroidery, quilting, and finishing. The club will have a table display at the Cedar Valley Arboretum Scarecrow Walk from noon to 4 p.m. on October 10th at the Arboretum, located at 1927 East Orange Road. Fall Pumpkin Painting Set, Waterloo. Led by the Waterloo Center for the Arts, free pumpkin painting for kids will be available downtown at Anton's Garden from noon to 3 p.m. Saturday at the corner of Sycamore and East 4th Streets. Kids of all ages are welcome. Cattle Congress to hold rodeo, Waterloo. You can get in free to see the Iowa Rodeo Cowboys State Finals with entry to the National Cattle Congress Fair. Rodeos take place at 7 p.m. nightly, Thursday through Saturday, on the NCC grounds. Merit Scholarship Semifinal Set. The National Merit Scholarship Corporation recently announced that 6 Cedar Valley students are semifinalists in the 67th Annual National Merit Scholarship Program. They include Connor DeGroot, Eli Fekima, Harrison Redfern, and Alexandra Somodi of Cedar Falls High School, Ryan McFadden of Don Bosco High School in Gilbertville, and Gabriel Jesse of Union High School in LaPorte City. These high school seniors have an opportunity to continue in the competition for National Merit Scholarships offered next spring. About 95% of the 16,000 semifinalists are expected to attain finalist standing. Approximately half of the finalists will win a National Merit Scholarship, earning the Merit Scholar title. Scholarships are underwritten by the not-for-profit with its own funds and by approximately 400 business organizations and higher education institutions. This next story, filed by Rob Bossart of the Courier Des Moines Bureau, Padotti announces departure from Iowa Department of Public Health, and it begins with a photograph of Dr. Caitlin Padotti speaking at a microphone, and we see our Governor Reynolds in the background. Des Moines, in an abrupt development with little explanation, officials with the Iowa Department of Public Health announced Wednesday that Dr. Caitlin Padotti, the state's medical director and epidemiologist, plans to leave the agency effective late October. Padotti has served in her current dual role since June 2018 and worked as medical epidemiologist for the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services prior to joining Iowa's public health agency. According to an IDPH press release, Padotti, who was a regular contributor during the governor's weekly news briefings during the height of the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic in Iowa, plans to pursue new career opportunities. Quote, I want to thank Dr. Padotti for her outstanding service to the people of Iowa, especially throughout the pandemic, Governor Kim Reynolds said in a statement. Quote, she has been instrumental to our state's strong COVID-19 response and a valued member of my team. I wish her much success and happiness and all that she pursues, unquote. Officials in the state public health department said they plan to work quickly to fill the position. Quote, the work of the last 18 months has been difficult at best, and I remain immensely appreciative of Dr. Padotti's steadfast partnership throughout, said IDPH Interim Director Kelly Garcia. I, along with our team at IDPH and the Department of Human Services, will miss her. Her personal sacrifice is to be commended, and we wish her the very best as she begins this new chapter. Waterloo nurse regains license after suspension, 4 OWIs, and criminal convictions. This story was filed by Clark Kaufman of the Iowa Capital Dispatch, Waterloo. The Iowa Board of Nursing has agreed to reinstate the license of a Waterloo nurse who has faced multiple allegations relating to theft, drunken driving, and endangering patients. The board agreed at its August meeting to reactivate the license of Casey Wente, subject to 2 years of probation. Wente's license was suspended in 2017 for an indefinite period. As part of her reinstatement, Wente has agreed to refrain from using alcohol or illicit drugs. Wente's problems with the licensing authorities date back to 2005, when the board alleged she had, quote, pleaded guilty to or was convicted of several theft and alcohol-related offenses from 1989 through 2002, and that in 2003 and 2004, she failed to show up for work at a nursing home without ensuring the safety of patients. Wente subsequently relinquished her license, but in 2011, the board agreed to reinstate the license subject to certain conditions. In 2015, the board charged Wente with being incapable of practicing nursing with responsible skill and safety due to a mental or physical condition. That allegation was tied to a 2015 evaluation by Colorado licensing authorities that concluded Wente had 4 drunken driving convictions, suffered from severe alcohol use disorder, and had used marijuana as recently as 2014. After being denied a license in Colorado, Wente worked at a Colorado Drug and Alcohol Detoxification Center by using her Iowa license and falsely claiming Iowa as her official state of residence. As a result of the 2015 allegations by the Iowa Board, Wente's license was indefinitely suspended in 2017. The board's recent action lifts that suspension. During her 2-year probationary period, Wente will be required to attend structured support group meetings, submit to alcohol and drug screening, and receive mental health counseling. Let's turn to the sports page now. In Iowa State football, Young faces making impact for Iowa State, filed by Ben Visser, sports correspondent. And it begins with a photograph of Iowa State wide receiver Xavier Hutchinson as he celebrates after scoring against UNLV during the first half Saturday, September 18th in Las Vegas. Ames, Iowa State has one of the most experienced and veteran teams in the country. The Cyclones only lost 4 or 5 key players from last year's team and returned 19 of the 22 starters. Still, some young faces are emerging in Ames. True freshman running back Eli Sanders took over for receiver Xavier Hutchinson as Iowa State's kick returner, and true freshman receiver Jalen Noel took over for receiver Tariq Milton at punt returner. Sanders took his first kick return opportunity against UNLV 32 yards to give Iowa State great field position. On his second opportunity, he returned it 19 yards, but since it was a shorter kick, he still returned it past the 25-yard line. Quote, Eli was really close to having 2 big returns in that game, but still, both of them were returned past the 25-yard line, and they were positive returns, Coach Matt Campbell said. Noel returned 4 of the 7 punts he fielded for 23 yards against UNLV. Quote, what Jalen was able to do in the game were some things that we've been missing over the last couple of years, Campbell said. There was a punt right at the end of the football game that kind of hung up there. That ball has hit the ground in the past, and bad things have happened, but he goes up and makes a great fair catch. Quote, I think we're really excited about what Jalen has brought to the table in one football game. He'll continue to see as it's a growth process for him. For comparison, Hutchinson returned just 1 kick for 21 yards in his 2 games as kick returner, and Milton returned just 1 punt for 11 yards. Milton also let one drop against Iowa, which turned a routine punt into a 69-yarder, which is what Campbell was referencing. The young players have provided a little extra juice in the return game. Quote, I think they both made positive steps last week, Campbell said. Both guys will continue to grow in those roles, and both guys have the elite speed and skill to be a difference maker in these roles. We're putting a lot on these 2 young guys, unquote. Hutchinson believes the coaching staff made the right decision having Sanders replace him. Quote, he has very good speed, Hutchinson said of Sanders, and he's a running back. He knows what little holes to look for that maybe I couldn't see. The coaches made the best decision for the team at the kick return spot. He can make some big plays there. Beyond their roles as returners, both freshmen have gotten playing time on offense. Noel has 5 catches for 27 yards, and Sanders has 5 rushes for just 9 yards, but he's proven to be a great threat out of the backfield, catching 3 passes for 41 yards. Fellow true freshman running back Deion Silas saw his first playing time against UNLV. He had 5 rushes for 32 yards and a touchdown. Defensively, 2 true freshman defensive backs have found their way onto the field. Miles Purchase has been a special teams player all season, but played a pivotal role in Iowa State's defense with Detrone Young out with an injury. TJ Tampa filled in for Young, but when Tampa needed a breather, the coaching staff turned to Purchase. Bo Frehler has been the other true freshman defensive back to get time. Like Purchase, he started on special teams, but has worked his way up to a backup role for Aishim Young at the star position. Quote, Miles continues to grow and continues to learn the playbook, cornerback Anthony Johnson said. Quote, he has all the capabilities as far as moving as a corner and playing corner. The quicker he can continue to grasp things, the more playing time he'll get. Quote, for Bo, he's playing the same position as Aishim Young, and he's playing just as physical. The way he's tackling, filling holes, and playing physical. You don't see that too often from a freshman. It's outstanding to see, unquote. All of the young faces finding roles has been a pleasant surprise for Campbell. Quote, what's surprised me a little bit has been the amount of young guys that have earned the right to play and have played so well for us, Campbell said. Quote, it started in special teams, but now guys are really forcing themselves into the two deep. Those things have certainly been positive, and it's created depth from the top down, unquote. Now in USHL hockey, a story filed by Jim Nelson, Blackhawks set for USHL opener, and it begins with a photograph of Waterloo's John Walden as he fights for the puck against Omaha's Ryan Conroy. Waterloo, a new season and a new era begins for the Waterloo Blackhawks. Waterloo opens the 2021-22 United States Hockey League season at the UPMC Lemino Sports Complex in Cranberry Township, Pennsylvania, as part of the league's Fall Classic this week. The Blackhawks will play Green Bay at 11 a.m. Thursday and Youngstown Friday at 4:30 p.m. It will be the first time in 20 seasons that P.K. O'Handley will not be on the bench as Waterloo's head coach. First-year coach Mac Smabby is now filling out the Blackhawks line chart. It will also be the debut for assistant coaches Chad Kolarik and P.D. Melgoza. Smabby is excited about the team he will put on the ice and encouraged but cautious about his team's 3-1 preseason record. Quote, real bullets start flying this week, Smabby said. That is an exciting thing. We talked about that with the group today. The preseason was good for us to get ready for now. Quote, expectations don't change. We know what we need and want to do. Now is when it's exciting and real, and I expect our intensity, effort, and attention to detail all to pick up, unquote. It will be a young squad that Smabby sends out onto the ice, but the Blackhawks do return three players entering their third seasons with the organization. Defense man Mason Reiners, a St. Cloud State commit, has played in 105 regular season contests for the Blackhawks. Forwards John Waldron and Jacob Jeanette have each been limited by injury the past two seasons, but are healthy and expected to be leaders. Forward Michael Lastarza played extensively last year as a 16-year-old, while players such as Carter Batchelder, Garrett Jafisky, and Jake Rossi all played late in the season as rookies. Lastarza is the top returning scorer after producing 11 goals and 13 assists in 2020-21. Waldron led the team in the preseason with 2 goals and 2 assists, and Lastarza had a goal and 2 assists. Both players played in just 3 of the 4 preseason games. Reiners is joined on the blue line by fellow veterans Cooper Wiley and Tucker Ness. The Blackhawks also added third-year veteran Tyler Precocious in a trade this month. He had 2 assists during exhibition play and has appeared in 30 games with Muskegon and Omaha the past 2 seasons. Quote, honestly, we are excited about everyone, Smabby said. They are here for a reason. We feel like they can play and contribute at this level. If there is one spot Smabby is super excited about, it is in net, where veterans Emmett Krotow and Jack Williams return. Both players had excellent performances during the preseason. Quote, I think we have some great goaltending, Smabby said. They played outstanding. We put them in some tough spots, and they bailed us out. As a coach, it is great to have guys in net who are feeling good and confident. Quote, what we need to do is a better job in front of them, make their lives easier, unquote. While the games start to officially count toward the standings, Smabby said the focus will remain the same for the Blackhawks. Quote, we talk about process over results, Smabby said. We have work to do, and that is plain and simple. We are learning. We are understanding more and more about what it is going to take. Quote, I have quite a bit of excitement about the group, but the truth of the matter is we have some work to do to get where we want to go, and that is probably the same for every team in the league right now, unquote. In swimming, despite no head-to-head races, Frerichs Martin put on a show, filed by Tim Nelson, and it begins with a photograph of Cedar Falls' Grace Frerichs as she swims the 100-yard freestyle against Iowa City West at home on Tuesday, Cedar Falls. There were 11 chances for a head-to-head duel. But on a night, the two best girls prep swimmers in the state of Iowa were in the same aquatic center. Neither shared the pool at the same time. Iowa City West topped Cedar Falls 109-63 Tuesday at Holmes Middle School in a Mississippi Valley Conference dual meet that featured several great races on senior night for the Tigers. Quote, I think any time we can go up against the top-ranked team in the state, it is fantastic for us because it shows us what we are striving for, Zizerbeck said. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Thursday, September 23rd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which will follow shortly. Thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.